Reporting on the games you love by people who love to game. The MMO Reporter Network.
You, my friend, are listening to the Happy Hearthstone. This show is brought to you by Doghouse Systems, who make some of the most powerful gaming PCs on the planet. And I can say from personal experience that they have awesome customer service. Use the code MMOReporter at doghousesystems.com and get a free 120GB SSD. And by Audible, the best audiobook service in existence. Seriously, if you like stories at all, you've got to check Audible out. Go to audibletrial.com/MMOReporter and get a free 1 month trial and a free audiobook. Those ads help cover our server costs for the show, but if you'd like to directly support this show and the nice people who make it, you can go to gamediplomat.com/donate and show us some love. Thank you very much. Hello, and welcome to episode 74 of the Happy Hearthstone Podcast, the longest running Hearthstone podcast in the history of space and time, and those little things we like to call cards. I'm your host, Josh Augustine, and this week I'm joined by James Lezerocio.
Hey,
did I pronounce that right?
You did, Zerocio. That's perfect.
All right, so Zerocio's here, and fun fact, he actually guested on Hearth Coach with Frid, who was on this show about like a year ago. He brought on his Mech Shaman deck, but your full-time show is Hero Power Cast.
Frid had me on Hearth Coach as a guest host when he actually helped me get Legend back in March for the first time, so...
That's how I first met you. Or wait, no, because you said before the show, how did we first meet?
Well, you were the one that had given me my beta key in early days of your show, Happy Hearthstone.
Yeah, that's crazy, because that had to be almost 3 years ago. Or no, like 2.5 years ago?
Yeah, it was just after BlizzCon. That would be BlizzCon 2013.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Long time. But yeah.
And it's finally paying off. I got you on the show.
Definitely. Hearth Coach hosts Frid and Dan.
Yeah.
Actually guest hosted on our episode of Hero Power on episode 20.
Oh, awesome.
And then they allowed me to come on their show and talk about my run up to Legend for the first time in March, which Frid helped me along the whole month. It was great.
That's really cool. So you're host of Hero Power Cast, which is a podcast. Do you want to give like a quick like 30-second spiel for people? Why should they listen to your show as opposed to any other Hearthstone show?
Yeah, well, we kind of put a different spin on things. We have three wonderful hosts. Two wonderful hosts and me. We have Avantes as our producer. He's pretty much the mastermind of the show. Versica is our creative mind who come up with wonderful topics and decks. And then I'm kind of the mouthpiece and comic relief of the show. But we go over the meta and news. And then what's unique about our show is we're both a podcast and a video cast. Our second half of our show, if you watch us on video, we actually play a deck from the meta from a different class every week on the ladder and to show people how to play the deck and maybe get a couple ranks up on the ladder.
Nice. That's really cool. So what deck did you play this past week?
This past week we played, trying to remember.
I know. I'm sorry. I put you on the spot.
You put me
on the spot. This isn't in the show notes. I apologize.
Oh no, that's fine. I have the information right here. I just have to, that's right. That's why I forgot it. We played, Hunter. The show typically is not a big fan of Hunter because for the longest time, the only Hunter deck was Face Hunter.
Yeah.
And it's not a very intuitive deck to try to show somebody how to play, but mid-range Hunters really came into the meta, and we decided we'd go ahead and show that on the deck.
Very cool.
On the deck of the week, so.
Nice. Well, that's awesome. And where can people find your show if they like what they hear? Because that sounds really fun.
We record Wednesday nights at 7:30 Eastern Time every week on Twitch. But the best way to reach us, if you go to heropowerhs.com, and click on the stream link, it'll take you right to our Twitch site. If you go to our website, heropowerhs.com, and and you can get all our downloads on YouTube, iTunes. We do blogs usually weekly. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it looks great. It's a nice looking website too.
Yeah, that's all Avanti's, and our lead blogger is Versica. Versica is a mastermind and genius when it comes to giving his opinion of the meta, changes in the game, different politics about the game, maybe some team changes or how professional Hearthstone's being done. He's really good about expressing his opinions and detailing the facts in blogs.
That's awesome. Oh, it looks like you got a 12 run arena win this week.
Very first time 12 run arena with Mage. First time I've ever gotten a 12 run. Closest I've ever gotten is 11 one time. It was a lot of fun to do. And I try to do a So There I Was blog whenever I do anything interesting or I have a really interesting play that I can screenshot. I'll post it up on HeroPowerHS.com. And that was, to me, that was a perfect one to do for this week.
Yeah, this is awesome. Congrats, dude. That's great. I've still only peaked at 11. I can't hit 12. So you have accomplished what I have not. Well done.
Yeah, it was difficult. There was a lot of RNG involved. It was a pretty good deck, but I wouldn't say it was great. Things just happen right. I've been 11 once, 10 once, and 9 a few times. But 12 is the first time there, and I'm happy.
Awesome. So is that why you're officially happy this week?
Yes, I am happy that I did get 12 wins in Arena. And I'm also happy because this week's also my birthday, and I get to see my daughter. So I have a lot to be happy for.
Happy birthday. Is today your actual birthday?
No.
Okay.
2 days from now, the 14th, on Flag Day, June 14th.
Nice. Well, happy birthday ahead of time.
Oh, thank you.
I'm happy because I voted. This was actually the first time. So obviously the primaries happened. I'm in the U.S., over in California specifically. But this was like the first time that I really paid a lot of attention to the local elections and stuff. Like I looked up like the Board of Education and all this sort of stuff, which I had never done before. So that was actually really fun, kind of learning more about my local community people that were being elected and getting involved there. It was really fun.
No, that's really neat.
Yeah. So that's cool. I'm going to do that in the future because before, like, I would pay attention to, like, presidential elections, and that was, like, really it. But I really liked this. Like, my vote matters a lot more because obviously there's a lot less people. I know a lot of the people that are actually getting voted for. It's really nice. So there you go. I don't think we have any news this week. Should we just jump into the main topic?
Sure. Sounds good to me.
Sweet. So I'm excited about this topic. We're talking about how to adapt to a changing meta, which obviously is very relevant right now because the meta is still changing, I mean, pretty rapidly. I'm surprised. I expected when the expansion came out, I gave it like 3 weeks, and I assumed it would kind of settle down. It's still evolving all the time, don't you think?
I do, and you see a lot of changes from tournament to tournament specifically. Mm-hmm. DreamHack really brought the resurgence of control decks and told people that C'Thun is a viable deck, even in tournaments and on the ladder. The spring prelims for both Europe and Americas really changed a lot of the meta to go a little bit more tempo. We're starting to see the spring championships, which the European championships were this weekend, and you're going to see the meta change based on the decks that were played, you know, yesterday and today. So it's really neat to see these meta changes. And they're changing drastically. And the one thing I do like is that some of the classes have 4 and 5 different meta decks in them. So it's really hard to predict what you're playing instead of back in the day where you'd see Warrior go, well, I know I'm playing Control Warrior. But that's not the case anymore.
Yeah, it's really exciting. So, I mean, before we get too into it, let's define some of these terms just in case people haven't heard them before. So what do we mean when we're saying the meta or there are meta decks and that sort of thing?
What meta really means is the style of play that's currently happening. So if a lot of decks that are on the ladder are more of a control-based system, control-based style, like a Control Warrior or a Dragon Priest – then the meta is kind of more of a control meta at that time. And there's a lot of different terminology with that. You have your mid-range, which is a little bit controlly, a little bit aggro. You have your tempo, which their job is to slowly do damage to you over course of many turns, but also control the board, so they're always the aggressor. And then you have your aggro, which they just go straight to face, and they try to constantly be the aggressor.
Yeah. I mean, and just over the course of the few years that Hearthstone's been out, we've kind of seen all of those metas. We've seen the meta where basically it was face hunters for days and everybody else just tried to race with them. And then we've seen like the C'Thun and when dragons were really, Dragon Priest was really popular, and the meta's just as slow as molasses. You're going to play 20 turns in every game, basically.
And that's true. And right now, with the tournaments that are coming out now, usually you would see one to two different types of meta, usually aggro and control, or maybe you'll see more mid-range and aggro. But if you're watching some of these major tournaments, you're actually seeing all four types of meta decks come out and change what's happening on the ladder. And even furthermore, within the separate meta categories, they're even defined even further, which is really exciting, especially with something like tempo, or what they also call as mid-range hunter, because it's a little tempo, it's a little mid-range. There's usually 18 constant cards in that style of deck, and 12 cards you can pretty much put in whatever you want to, which is not common for a normal meta deck. Usually a normal meta deck has a good solid 24, 26 cards, and then you fill in the last four or six with your personal preferences.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the other side of the term meta, right? Is it's also a way of saying like popular or kind of standard. So it also kind of implies that you're going, I don't know the right way to say this, like going with the flow, essentially, like not net decking a lot of times, looking up decks online and building those because it's the quote meta deck, which is kind of another way of saying the deck that's winning a lot, right?
Yeah. If you equate it to kind of normal sports like baseball, if a specific set of hitters in baseball are using Louisville Sluggers and they seem to be giving them the best hit off the bat, maybe more base hits, more home runs, then everybody in the league is going to switch over to Louisville Sluggers. Mm-hmm. Because that's the quote-unquote meta, and that's the best way to swing a bat. And that's kind of equates to Hearthstone the same way. If you go to these tournaments and the most successful deck, or going up the ladder to Legend, the most successful deck is a shaman, an aggro shaman deck, then everybody's going to start playing that aggro shaman deck.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about why, I guess, at the most basic level, what makes the meta change, right? Why is this changing? Because essentially we have the same cards as we've had for several months. Why does it keep changing?
Well, and that's a really good question. The best way to look at it is when a meta gets established, like, say, with the example of aggro shaman, somebody, usually a streamer or somebody in the major tournament scene, is going to find a way to counter that meta with another deck. Well, then that deck becomes the new meta. And in these tournaments where you usually play three or four decks and usually one ban, there usually ends up being a solid three to four decks in the meta, which is usually why when you're laddering up in Hearthstone through the ladder system, you usually see those same three or four decks. And that's basically once those decks become so popular, everybody's playing them, somebody, usually, like I said, a popular streamer, will play something else to beat it, and then that becomes the new meta.
Yeah. Now, there have been times, especially kind of right before expansions, where it seems like the meta is kind of stabilized. There is like an end to that cycle, right, until you get new cards.
Yes, and some will say stabilized, and some will say stale.
Sure.
And that's usually, and to kind of talk about our show a little bit more, Hero Power, we try to find times that the meta gets stale and bring out new decks that are just off the cuff and you never heard of, maybe has a really unique win condition. So we try to help the meta change around and stay fresh by putting out new ideas. because we're one of those outlets that people might get new meta ideas from.
Yeah. I mean, and that's kind of, we hinted at the top of the show as well, but that's why kind of the times around these new expansions are so exciting, because when the meta is, quote, stale, it may change, you know, every few weeks, but now it's changing every couple days right now. And so, I mean, at the most basic level, why is it important to adapt to the meta? Why can't you just be like, I found this Dragon Priest deck, no one is playing it, but I think it's great, I'm going to play it anyways. I mean, do you have to adapt to the meta?
In truth, you don't have to adapt to the meta, but at the same time, you have to be flexible. To kind of give you an idea, I was a long-term mid-range druid player, and I loved my mid-range druid. Well, everybody started hating mid-range druids, so they changed their decks and they adjusted the meta so they countered mid-range druid. Well, I would just not play my mid-range druid for a while. I would play something else that was a little better in the meta, and then once the meta started shifting again, I'd go right back to the mid-range druid and pull it out of the closet, and I wouldn't change a single thing in it. I would leave it the way it was because it was successful, you know, the month prior, and that worked for me. So you can still hang on to those decks. You don't have to throw them in the trash can. You don't have to delete the deck, but maybe put them on the back burner until the meta changes a little bit more, and then you can go back to them.
Yeah, and that's a lot of, I guess, with that, you were identifying there are a lot of decks. The popular decks right now are ones that this deck is bad against, and so that's why you put it aside. And then
that's correct.
Because a lot of times when the meta shifts, it's not because a deck gets worse. It's just that it's bad. It's worse against the current popular decks, right? So that deck is still fine in the future.
Yeah, and you may find out that there's a time to play your deck that was good at that time, but now the meta has changed. I know that there are some times that I will wait to the very end of the month to do some ladder runs because I know everybody's going to play aggro, and then I just play something that counters aggro. And they're playing aggro out of necessity because they need to get as many wins as possible to try to get legend. Well, I just want to get some good, solid, high win percentages, so I run something that will just beat aggro every time.
That is brilliant. And incredibly cruel. I don't... You're like an evil villain over there. Yes, yes, play your aggro decks. I know you must. That's awesome.
And you can also just change your current deck. When I was able to get legend, it was a tough grind because everybody was playing aggro and it was just who aggroed faster. And so I finally decided to throw an extra consecrate in my aggro paladin to counter the other aggro decks, and that was exactly what I needed. I went, I think, 8-2 and finally got legend.
Wow, nice. So it's funny how just one small change like that can make such a big deal.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what the meta is all about. Just changing one card can totally change the percentage that you will win against a certain type of deck.
Yeah. All right, so before we jump into more of the details and advice, one last point. It's interesting. It depends also how much you care about the meta and if how much you feel like you have to adapt to it. I think also depends on what your goals are, right? Because you have the spectrum, right? Obviously, pro players have to adapt to the meta because that's essentially their job. And all they care about is win rate. That's what matters. And if you're trying to climb the ranked ladder, like you're saying, you have to as well, or else you're not going to do well. But I think if you're just playing casual or if you're maybe just trying to do your quests, I mean, that's probably the time that you're just... You can play around with totally random decks like you're talking about that don't fit into the meta and don't make a lot of sense, but you just want to have fun with.
Yeah, I played on the ladder once with a deck I made recently, and it didn't have a high win rate, but I had the Meek Shall Inherit quest.
Oh, cool.
So I made a deck I called Power of One, and it was a hunter deck that had nothing but one cost cards in it. The entire deck was nothing but one.
Hey, it's good. I know. I had the Spellmaster quest, and I had Lock and Load Yogg-Saron, so I just went with that. Oh, wow. I got it done in two games. It was great.
Yeah, when you drop down two Brave Archers, which are the last two cards in your hand, and then hero power them for six damage.
Oh my gosh!
It's not a very popular deck, and I got a lot of wonderful friend requests afterwards. But it was fun to play.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah, and it's nice to get little fun moments like that, because normally you would never get that Brave Archer combo. So it's just, and now you have. You've lived the Brave Archer dream.
Exactly. Now, when you're talking about rank play versus pro play, and when you're talking pro play, there's tournament pros and then there's legend pros. Now, most people that are working on the ladder will take decks that legends are in their top 10 legend. Well, unfortunately, that doesn't always work out well, because what's in the top 10 legend may not work in the ranks 1 through 20 because the meta is so different. So you have to kind of watch where you're at first, and then maybe look at some of the legend rank players and see how to make some changes to those decks.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. How do you do that, right? Because say I'm ranked 10. I decided this is the month I'm going to fight and get legendary. How do I figure out what the meta is? Is it just a matter of like keeping track, like writing down what you face each game?
A lot of people are really heavy on spreadsheets or forms of deck trackers. I use them from time to time depending how serious I am on the ladder, but most of the time I don't want to use it as a crutch. So I just kind of go off my instinct and my regular play and just my knowledge. Now, there are wonderful sites like Tempo Storm and Hearthpwn and a few of those other sites that are really good at giving you an idea and finding what you should play on the ladder. Now, most of that information is taken from legend ranks, so it gets a little hard to know what's being played. Now, the best way, in my opinion, is to just play. And whatever you start playing against, change your deck or change to a different deck that you know is going to adapt to it.
So how many games do you have to play before you get a good feeling of kind of what you're up against? Because most of the time, just anecdotally, when I'm playing, like, I'll face 5 or 6 different decks in 5 or 6 different games. So how do you know, like, okay, I'm confident now that Aggro Shaman is something I'm going to be seeing all the time?
If you would ask this question about 3 or 4 months ago, I would say probably 5, 6 games. But with the new meta the way it is now, it's really difficult. And I have a friend we mentioned earlier, Frid. I never see him play Hearthstone, but he gets legend every single month.
Actually spectate and watch him pretty often because he's my highest ranked friend. So I just like watching him play. Okay.
Let's see, you must find a time that he's playing, because I definitely don't. I think he has like a sweet spot in time, and that's another thing, is sometimes certain type of decks happen during a certain time of night.
What?
During the workday.
How can that be true?
During the workday, some people just hop on during their lunch, so they're probably going to play aggro decks.
Okay, interesting, because they don't have a lot of time.
Exactly. When they're home at night and they've finished eating dinner and the kids are in bed and they're winding down for the night, they might actually play a more controlly or mid-range deck because they know they can play 20 or 30 minutes. So the time of the day does matter. Frid, however, does a lot of spectating. I see him in the game all the time, but he's always spectating somebody and not playing as much. If you spectate somebody that's around the same rank as you, you can see what's in the meta without risking wins or losses.
That's interesting. You're like scouting ahead.
Exactly. Because if you're sitting at rank 5 and you want to get up to rank 1, find some friends on your friends list that are right around that 7 to 4 rank and spectate them. And you're going to see in that little block, usually it's about a 3 or 4 step block on the ladder, that the metas change.
And how drastic do they change? Because honestly, I don't climb very high in ranked. I go to like 15 each month and that's it. But I see a lot of the decks that I hear people talking about. It can't change that much, right? Or does it really?
Well, you also have to think, if you're lower in, like, say, the 20s, even between 20 and 15, the players playing from 20 to 15 may not have the same epics and legendaries that everybody else has.
That's true.
And then all you have to do is change those same decks with maybe a couple legendaries, take out a Loot Hoarder and put in a Thaunos, take out some of the cards everybody has and put in something a little bit, bigger. I've seen guys running Demolishers because they don't have Ragnaros. Well, once they get Ragnaros, next thing I know, I see them up at rank 10.
Yeah.
So all they've changed is one or two cards, but because of the caliber of cards, they were able to jump up another five ranks.
Okay, that's interesting. So the higher you get, probably the more closely they align with kind of the ideal version of that deck?
Exactly.
Interesting. That's pretty
cool.
And
then you'll also have the Dark Horse, somebody who is just using the right tech card. If every deck is using Doomsayer, but you decide to put in things that counter Doomsayer, like Stampeding Kodo, or a popular one that I like is Crazed Alchemist, then all of a sudden your win rate changes because you're able to have board presence and counter that card so easily.
Yeah, Crazed Alchemist is a great counter. That two mana, that's got to be the cheapest counter.
Yeah, because it runs right in line with playing it the turn after they put out their Doomsayer. And in some cases, you can even put out a one-cost minion with that. So you're developing the board, and they basically wasted two mana.
Yeah, that's awesome. See, I'm learning things already, and you're blowing my mind with all this talk already, Zeroshio. This is great. So let's talk real fast about... So the meta, so far we've been talking about it with what's popular. And especially it kind of... At low, I guess, what's the correct terminology? Is lower ranks mean better, even though the numbers are lower?
Or yes. Does lower ranks mean... Your lower ranks are technically lower on the rung, so they're your 25s up to 20. To be honest, the rank that you're at isn't always indicative of how well you play the game. To be honest, I really, for the longest time, didn't get past rank 5. I felt I had the capability of being legend, but I just didn't have the time to do it.
Yeah.
And not until the month of March, where working for a school system allowed me to have spring break, I was able to put enough man hours into making that grind up to legend.
Nice. See, I know, I'm totally jealous. My wife is a teacher too, so she's off on summer now. It's like, I totally forgot that some people just get 3 months a year off. That's nice.
Yeah. I'm not as lucky. I worked for a school system as tech support, so I still worked in the summer.
But I
did get the spring breaks and the fall breaks. Yeah. So.
And summer was probably a bit more quiet, at least.
Yeah, it's busier, but I'm the only one in the building.
All right, so we talked about the meta basically being what's popular, right? What you're seeing a lot of. But at lower ranks, like mine, you still see a lot of decks that are kind of random and weird. Is there a difference between being popular and strong for the meta? Like, do you really only care about the decks that are winning, even if you're facing other decks a lot? Like, for example, the big example to me was the C'Thun decks, right? Right after release, everybody was playing just pure C'Thun decks. Which we know aren't really the best decks. And we kind of knew it at the time, but it was so exciting anyways. That's what everyone was running. Is that what you want to try and counter, even though it's not a perfect deck? Just because everyone's running it?
C'Thun decks are a unique breed that we never heard of until that type of deck we didn't really hear of because of Whispers of the Old Gods. They gave you C'Thun for free.
Yeah.
So everybody has C'Thun. And a lot of times, decks are built around a specific legendary, especially your mid-range to control decks. Aggro decks, not so much. But because everybody got C'Thun, that's the first deck everybody wanted to make.
Yeah.
You also have to look at what they call the skill cap of the deck. One of the highest win rate decks is Freeze Mage. But not everybody can just pilot a Freeze Mage and get a high win rate with it.
Yeah,
you have to be very skilled at knowing the right choices and making key decisions throughout the game. And one key decision that you make the wrong decision with may cost you the game.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't see something like a Freeze Mage so often because it takes a very good person to pilot it. Somebody's very skilled at that deck. Then you have something that's like face hunter back in the day, or now aggro shaman, which is a little more, you put everything in your hand on the board and you go to face.
Yeah, it's a little more forgiving.
That has a little lower skill cap required. Doesn't mean you don't have skill if you play that deck. It just doesn't require a lot of in-depth thinking. There may be a few times that you don't go to face because specific cards are on the board. You need to remove them, like a knife juggler. But other than that, you're really just going to keep going to face and race your opponent. And because of that, because it has a lower skill ceiling, then you see that more often on the ladder. Because of that, you can counter it really easy because you know a lot of people are going to play it.
Okay, so in this example, when you're figuring out what the meta is and how you want to counter it, you're not really considering Freeze Mage as part of the meta. In the example you gave, because you're saying it's not played super often, even though it's really strong, it's not very popular, so I'm not going to worry about it.
You'll see Freeze Mage that's in the meta for tournament play, because most of the people in at that level of major tournaments have the skill to pilot that deck.
Yeah.
Then you'll have a lot of people that take that to the ladder and don't get any success from it.
Yeah.
And they wonder why all these tournament players are able to do well with the deck, but when they play it at rank 15, which they should be better because they're beating legends with it, it loses. Well, it's because they have trained themselves to make specific key decisions that aren't really easy to identify.
Yeah. And they're also now, like the top 20 players in the entire world.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Now, if you take the time to learn the deck and watch the VODs and streamers and pinpoint those decisions, then you may have better success with that. And that comes into what type of player you are. If you're more of an analytical, you know, numbers-driven player, then something like a Freeze Mage might work for you. So don't count it out just because you're not in the legend ranks. You might be able to make that deck work. So give it a try.
Okay, so let's go through an example, and you can kind of give me advice. Say I'm playing, let's just say, Dragon Priest, right? I'm super into Dragon Priest. It's beating all the decks on the meta, except for one. There's one that just always it loses to. Mm-hmm. How do you balance knowing, like, okay, I need to make my deck not lose to this, but not weaken it against all the other options? Or do you just accept, like, okay, that deck is always going to beat me, but I will beat the other three all the time?
Sometimes you have to resign the fact that your win rate is expected to be lower against them.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say concede every time you see that deck, because you may be able to not change the – you can't change the cards that are in it, but you can change your play. Maybe that specific deck has a specific minion that wrecks you every single time. Well, then make sure you save your one piece of removal. Even if you see something that you're having trouble, you'll have to trade three minions into, or you can use this piece of removal. You have to remind yourself, I need to save that removal for Nazoth, or I need to save that removal for Ragnaros, because that is the card that's beating me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. So you have to give up a little efficiency every now and then because you've learned what in the meta version of the deck, what is the big threat.
And a great example, if you're playing your Dragon Priest and you have Entomb in your deck,
mm-hmm.
A great way to handle that is if you're having trouble with, say, Nazoth, then the big power in Nazoth is the cards that can return when he comes into play. Mm-hmm. If the one card that returns when he comes into play that really messes you up is Sylvanas, you want to save your Entomb for Sylvanas. And that will change your win rates and how successful you are against that deck.
Interesting. Yeah, that's really good. Because, I mean, it is definitely tempting. If something is punching you in the face and you just really want to get it off the board, it's tempting to be like, I'm just going to use Entomb. I just got to. But yeah. Sometimes you need patience.
And watching a lot of the streamers, they'll teach you, always use one card when you can, instead of using two or three cards. When in truth, that's not always the case. You want to try to get those value trades. But if you have one card that's meant for a specific threat, then sometimes you have to make the lesser valued trade so that you have the tools to get rid of a big threat.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So as we're talking through this, how useful do you think it is for, say, someone that's fighting to get out of, just to get to 20 every month? How useful is it for them to actually look up, like, what's being played at tournaments and watch the streamers? Is the meta so different that, I mean, it's almost kind of misleading to look at those decks and assume that's what they're going to be facing?
Well, I would say that just because it's played in a tournament or on the legend ranks, it's not always successful at your rank. However, what I like to do is look to see what's being played on the legend ranks and in tournaments, and know that players throughout the ladder, even at my rank, are probably going to try to emulate those, emulate those skill sets and that those decks. So I will try to pick things out of the meta that may counter those. So watching tournaments and seeing what decks beat those type of decks, usually when they're maybe not the most popular deck, like right now, N'Zoth Paladin is in tournaments more as a counter to other decks. Because of that, you might want to play N'Zoth Paladin because the big popular set of meta decks on the ladder are things that it beats.
Yeah. That makes total sense. And I mean, because I've played super low ranks, and even at those, you still see a lot of the same decks, because I think people see it from the tournaments and just start playing them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So basically, you want to not make the same mistakes so others are going to make in your rank and capitalize off those mistakes.
Yeah. I love that idea of watching the tournament play and the high-level streamers to learn just how to counter things. So that when you do run into, N'Zoth Paladin or whatever it is, you know, oh, okay, I saw them use Sylvanas or whatever to really beat them. So maybe I'll throw Sylvanas in my deck. And just learning those little tricks is super handy.
Exactly.
Very cool. All right, so that's kind of like how to identify what the meta is, Let's talk about how to adapt them. You had three big tips you wanted to give out, right?
Yes.
All right, walk me through them.
The big one, and we discussed it a little bit, is whether you want to beat them or join them. And that really depends on your skill set. So you want to see what's going on in the meta. If the meta is something you think you can pilot really well and maybe beat other players playing the exact same types of decks, you might want to beat them. Or we might want to join them and beat those players that are picking that. You'll want to join those guys and try to go up the ladder. However, if something's very strong, but you know how to counter that meta, and you can have a high win rate against those decks that are out there right now, example, Aggro Shaman, then you want to make a deck to counter them, and you're going to try to beat them.
So what is it... How much of that is like personal preference, right? Because in general, I prefer control decks over aggro decks. Is that kind of what you're leaning towards to like when you say if you think you can pilot the deck well?
I'm generally more of a mid-range to control player. If I feel I have to play aggro because that's what the meta is, I will likely try to play a control deck that counters that aggro deck instead.
Okay.
Because I'm better at playing control decks.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's a really important thing, because a lot of times people look and go like, okay, this deck is really popular. But if it's not your style and it's not what you're used to playing, you're not going to play it very well. Like when I play aggro decks, I just don't play them as well. And of course, you can put in the practice and put in the time and get better at it. But if you're looking for more instant results, trying to find something that you're familiar with is probably good.
Yeah, and see, in my case, I don't play aggro very well. But I had a very good grasp of the Paladin class. So I found a variation of aggro that was a Paladin deck because I knew how to pilot a normal Paladin deck. I just had to change my mindset to go more aggro. So it was more comfortable for me than, say, an aggro Hunter or an aggro Shaman. And I did really well with it.
And I think probably the other half of that is probably also identifying which cards you have, right? Because even if a deck is super good and has a great win rate, if you can only build half of it, you're not going to be building a very good deck, right?
Exactly. And you may be able to find a deck that counters that meta that doesn't have a lot of your high, what we call high dollar cards, even though you don't really, you spend dust on them. Those high dollar cards, those legendaries, those epics, because a lot of people think legendaries are the only cards you don't get. Epics are very hard to get as well. So sometimes I don't even have epics that I need for a deck. So I have to find another way to substitute those cards or play a different deck that may counter that.
Yeah, I mean, so spoiler alert, we opened 7 packs at the end of the show. I got 3 classic epics I had never had before. It's crazy.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. When I open packs, I'll open them and go, wow, I got an epic, and I'll check my dust and realize, wow, I didn't get dust for that because I didn't have that card. And I've opened a lot of Old Gods packs from playing Arena.
Yeah. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about identifying kind of how to counter the meta. So if you decide you want to not join them but beat them, is it a matter of kind of watching the pro players and watching the tournaments and kind of getting ideas for what they're using to counter?
Yes. Watching VODs and streamers, what's really nice is if you can find some streamers that are really good at the game, but they don't always hit legend at a very quick pace. So you might find them playing in the 10s to 5 range, and a lot of those streamers don't have a lot of people in their Twitch chat. And I know Twitch chat can be a little dicey sometimes, but if they only have like maybe 5, 10, or even like 50 people watching, they're likely not going to have a lot of chatter, so they'll interact with their chat more often. You can ask them a question, hey, I don't have this card, but I like this deck. Is there something I could substitute? And a lot of times they'll answer you live right on the stream.
Oh, that's really cool. Do you happen to have any like specific people that we could link in the show notes or anything that you think would be good for that?
I don't at this time because I haven't actually streamed and watched those streams in a long time. I know on our show on Wednesday nights, we will take questions from our chat as we're playing the deck. Cool. And that's HeroPowerHS.com. As well as, I believe, top 16 from the spring prelims for the Americas, Bloody Face. I believe he's at Bloody Face HS on Twitch. He has been talking about streaming more often. And he would be a good one to get in and watch. And there's a couple, I think maybe next time is another good one that he does get legend usually every season, but he's very interactive with his chat as well.
Very cool. Yeah. And even if none of these people are online, you can go to Twitch at any time, just click Hearthstone and it brings up a list of everyone streaming it. I was able to scroll through really fast. I mean, there's plenty on here with like, you know, anywhere between 5 and 15. I mean, you could just bounce between a bunch of them and see which ones respond to you. Yeah.
Just scroll all the way to the bottom and look for somebody with a smiling face.
Let's see. Because if they're smiling
on their stream, then they're probably going to interact well.
That's true. Don't go to the very bottom of the list. I found one. It is the Hearthstone close sign with 0 viewers. So maybe a little above the very bottom. All right, cool. So any other thoughts there? Should we move on to the next tip?
Well, the next one is important because obviously this is a lot of information that we've been disseminating.
Yeah.
You can get burnt out or get on what they call tilt, which is actually more of a poker term, often. And that's where you're getting a high loss rate. And sometimes you're not losing as often as you think you are. It's just because you lost 2 or 3 in a row, you think, well, you don't remember the last 17 wins you just had.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you are getting on burnout or tilt, you just need to take a break from the game. Now, in my case, I usually just take my headset out, go to the main screen, and rethink some of the games I lost. Sometimes I'll go get me a cold drink, stretch my legs a little bit, and see what caused my losses. Now, if I look back and realize the losses I had were just bad matchups, maybe my deck isn't good against a specific mid-range deck and that's what I kept playing, then I can either think to change my deck or take about a half-hour break and wait for those people to flush through the meta and maybe I'll play somebody else. Yeah. If you get on tilt, that usually means you're getting frustrated and you're making misplays and you're making mistakes that are out of emotion. And in those cases, you just need to kind of find out what's causing that stress to you, take a couple breaths and either continue playing if you're comfortable or just take a break for a little while.
So when you're talking about taking breaks, it sounds like these are actually pretty short breaks. You know, like 30 minutes, come back. Do you ever just be like, yeah, I need to be done for the day because this is just isn't working?
Yes. Now, I tend to recoup really fast. I'm easily comforted by food, so I go make me a sandwich and a drink, and I'm happy, and I'm back to my old self, and I can get right to it. Some people need to take a couple hour or even the rest of the day, and in some cases of some of our friends in the community, I knew somebody who's like, I'm not going to play for a week. And then he came back and was really excited at the end of the season. He got all the way to his highest, which was ranked 2, wow, because he took a week break and was able to refresh his mind. And during that time, he wasn't just disconnecting from Hearthstone. He was looking at some of the sites and finding out how he can change his decks and reset himself to be ready to get back to the ladder.
Interesting. That's a really cool way to look at it. So you're doing research, just making sure you're in the right headspace, and then jump right back in.
Oh, yeah. And if you find out that you're getting to that emotional fatigue about the same time during the week or same time during the day, you may be finding out that you need to set a play schedule. Maybe you only play once every other day. Maybe you only play 2 hours at a time and then take a break because that's really all that you personally can handle. And that doesn't mean that you're lesser or better than anybody else. Everybody has their different points of fatigue. And Hearthstone's a very, very mental game. You're constantly thinking of odds and changes and correct choices and incorrect choices and what your opponent going to do and what are you going to do over the next few turns. So you can really get fatigued mentally pretty quick if you're not paying attention to it.
Yeah. You're basically doing a series of puzzles constantly.
And you might hear that some of these pro players have teams, and having somebody to bounce information off is really good. I know in my case, when I was going up the Legend ladder, Frid helped me out a lot. And he would see I get 2 or 3 losses in a row, and he's like, hey, do you need to take a break? And I say, yes. But instead of not playing, we would just sit and chat, and he'd say, hey, why are you losing? And I'd point out some situations, and he'd say, well, those aren't mistakes. It seems like bad matchups, so don't get discouraged. Or he'll say, well, you might have been better if you did this play against this deck than this play. And so he kind of would help me think through those different steps and thought processes and maybe realize that I wasn't making misplays. I was still playing really well. I just had bad RNG, bad luck, or bad matchups. And in the case of bad matchups, taking a little break waiting for those players to get out of your rank level can help you.
So does that actually happen? Is the pool of players small enough that like those players actually move on and you wouldn't play them even though you would have otherwise?
They are during certain times of day. Usually on a weekend, you're going to have so many that it's not really going to affect you. But if you're playing, like, say, on a weekday when a lot of people are at work or not playing Hearthstone, you might get that. It also tries to match you up within your rank with people that have similar, what they call MMR. It's your match ratings. So somebody who has a similar win rate loss, you might face. I know when I was up in the 1 through 5s, I played a lot of pro players. I played Tice. I played Tides of Time, Dog, Fibonacci, DAVA. These are notable pro players, which tells me that my win-loss rate in those ranks put me against those, which is more of a compliment than it is a negative. So if you're playing and you go, wow, why do I keep getting matched up against people with legend card backs? Why do I keep getting matched up against known streamers? Well, maybe you're just that good and you don't have the time to make it to legend, which is why you normally don't make it to legend.
I like it. That's an uplifting thought. That's a happy Hearthstone thought right there.
And when you think about things like that, it puts you in a good mood. You get back on the ladder, and then you have a win rate.
Yeah.
You have a win streak.
All right, so let's talk about the darker side real fast. Let's do the depressed Hearthstone talk. So when you're sitting there and you're kind of thinking back through the games and trying to remember what went wrong, what went right, how is it useful to basically tell yourself that it was unlucky, even if it wasn't? Because, I mean, what if when you're going through that and you realize, like, no, I just made a ton of mistakes. I guess I'm really bad at this game. Like, I feel like I could, like, spiral into depression and just not do well.
Well, if you see a specific mistake, it's better to acknowledge that mistake, maybe write it down on a piece of paper so that next time you see that situation, that scenario, you will correct your actions and fix yourself than trying to convince yourself it was just bad RNG. Now, there are times that it is just bad luck, bad RNG, and it's good to note that because it's out of your control.
Yeah.
So the truth is, you just be honest with yourself and look at it as a learning experience and not a negative accountability. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Basically, don't beat yourself up over it. Learn from it, and you'll be a better player because of it.
Yeah. That sounds like a very logical, sensible approach to it. I like it. That's hard to do sometimes when you're on a hard losing streak, but that does sound like the best action. So in that case, if I was in the situation where I was losing a bunch, thought back through, realized I just made a lot of dumb choices, which has happened when I was practicing the Dreadsteed deck for last episode, the game during my lunch, I think I hero powered 3 times when it resulted in me not getting a card. Like, my hand was already full, or I had 9 and it was going to be full next turn. I think at that point, that's maybe just when I take the rest of the day off.
Sometimes that happens, and I've done it, where I'm like, well, I'm at 8 cards, I'm good, and I throw things on the board, and then I forget that I just put an Acolyte of Pain at 8 cards. If they hit it 3 times, I'm going to burn a card.
Oh, yeah.
And I end up burning my win condition.
Oh.
And I'm like, wow, why did I not think about that? And sometimes I'll look at the situation and go, you know, I've been playing for about 6 hours. I probably need to take a break.
Yeah. And sometimes that's a good sign, right? You have to accept errors as that as like a sign being like, okay, yeah, it's time to go.
And it's better to acknowledge that and get a loss out of it than not acknowledge it and just try to push through and then you lose 13. And I had that happen. I was getting towards the end of spring break. And see, during my spring break, I was hoping to get legend, but I didn't. And right that last day of spring break, I went from rank 3 all the way. At one point I was rank 1, but I had fallen to 3. I went all the way from 3 back to 7.
Oh, man.
And it was because I was pushing too hard.
Yeah.
And if I would have just realized, even though we're going back to school, I still had about 1.5 weeks left in the season, I can play an hour a night, a few hours during the next weekend. I didn't need to push that hard. But it was something that I just couldn't convince myself. And if I had learned from it, I probably would have got legend a little earlier in the season instead of the last 2.5 hours of the season.
Yeah. That makes total sense. All right, last tip.
The best thing you can remember is this is a game. So have fun. And one of the best fun ways to keep the game fresh is creating your own meta. If you're seeing the meta stale or so predictable, make your own crazy, wild, just ridiculous decks. They may not have the highest win rate, but you may actually get some wins off of those out of pure unpredictability. I know when we do some of our shows, we'll be playing a deck and we'll see it's a certain, I will see it's warrior. Well, it's either mid-range or tempo, or it could be control. And then we realize, well, maybe it's Dragon. Maybe it's Reno. And then they start throwing some cards. Like, what is this deck we're playing? Next thing we know, we're getting beat out of nowhere from some crazy, ridiculous shenanigans of Leroy Jenkins, double faceless manipulator. It's nuts. And at the end of it, we lost. But we were like, this was really fun to play against. So find something that is just off the wall. I suggest Priest, because Priest has some of the most confusing off the wall ways to beat your opponent.
Yeah.
And my wife is making jokes at me. We always say that Hearthstone's kind of like paper, rock, scissors. Some decks are paper, rock, and scissors, and they beat each other. And then you play some Priest deck with Thought Steals and Mind Controls, and it's just like potato chip.
Yeah. Dude, they just love to just screw with all your plans.
Yeah, and that's fun. And especially if you're getting any form of burnout, just make some off the wall Murloc deck or try to find a deck that's not tri-based, but maybe has all the same color artwork, or, you know, just something to have fun and break through the monotony. And you don't have to put it on the ladder, but I put everything on the ladder, even if I'm having fun.
I get, there's definitely a split in philosophies there. Some people, you know, like playing casual because there's no pressure, and other people are just like, hey, if I'm going to play, I might as well see if I get wins and go up.
Well, I've learned if you go to casual, you play the exact same decks that are on the ladder because they're just practicing the decks they've saw on a VOD or saw on a stream or on tournaments so they can put them on the ladder. So you're going to face the same decks either way. It's just if you're willing to sacrifice a little loss. I think with the new reward system they put in a while ago where you get credit at the end of the month for your highest rank, not just where you're at. You can have a little fun at the end of the season if you don't expect to get legend or anything.
Yeah.
If you got your level 5 chest and you're happy with that and you don't think you have the time to get legend, why not play some off-the-wall deck and lose a few ranks but have fun?
Yeah, and hey, the people that are trying to climb will thank you very kindly for those wins.
Exactly.
That's an interesting idea. Actually, I hadn't thought about that because I got the rank I want. I'm not going to get the next one, so I was just going to not play ranked for the rest of the month. But maybe I'll just go in and just kind of goof around and help other people get wins. That's kind of fun.
I know when I made that Power of One deck, I had a guy beat me pretty easily. And he friended me afterwards, and I'm like, oh, great. What's this going to happen? Because sometimes you get some bad messages.
Yeah.
I was like, well, he won, so what's he going to say? So he was like, what was that? So I'm just having fun on the ladder. Everything in the deck is one mana cost. And he's like, that is hilarious. Thank you for the win.
See, that's awesome. That's really cool. So there you go. You can make friends and have fun.
Exactly.
Cool. So any other parting thoughts on the meta or kind of how to deal with it as it's changing before we move on to community?
The most important thing to me is it's important in a game like this if you're competitive. I call myself casual competitive because I don't have the time to get into a lot of tournaments. But when it comes down to it, you're playing this game because you enjoy the game. Don't ever lose focus on that. Have fun. Make really neat, crazy decks. And if you win and you accomplish your goals, great. But don't turn Hearthstone into a job.
I like it. I'm on board with that. All right, so let's jump into the questions in the community. We have two questions, again, from the Google Plus group. Thank you guys for doing that, and Craig for collecting them last time. Nathan asks, what's the best Hearthstone deck tracker to get? So you mentioned spreadsheets earlier. Do you think spreadsheets are still the way to go? I know Scott runs his own spreadsheet, another common host on here. Or do you prefer a particular website?
If you are of the analytical mind, and basically if these websites don't do enough math for you, then spreadsheets are the way to go. I think Scott would not be satisfied with a lot of these tools.
Yeah.
I know a professional player by the name of Tice does the same thing, where he very detailed breakdown of all of his games, what type of meta deck he played against, win rates within those meta decks, not just class, but those specific meta decks. If you feel you want to put that much energy into it, I would recommend going spreadsheets. I'm a big spreadsheet person. I personally don't want to put in the time to building all those spreadsheets and putting in all the data. But I would probably get better results if I did. I don't use the trackers often unless I'm really pushing for Legend or focusing on preparing for a tournament. But when I do, I use Hearthstone Deck Tracker. And Hearthstone Deck Tracker is really good that it keeps track of your win-loss rates against specific classes. And you can actually make changes to your decks in the deck tracker while you're playing and see the difference in those changes by your win rates. So yeah, Hearthstone Deck Tracker is the one that I use when I use it.
Very cool. And then the other question we got is Chris asks, how are you liking the new deck recipes? So this is the thing where when you're building a deck now, I think they list three for each class that are kind of pre-built decks and kind of say like, hey, you own most of the cards here. Do you want to fill in the rest? That sort of thing. Have you used them at all?
As a matter of fact, when Whisper of the Old God first came out and the deck tracker was added, on Hero Power, our podcast, we didn't have any really good ideas of where the meta was, so we couldn't make any meta decks because nobody was playing tournaments yet. Nobody was really solidifying anything other than C'Thun because everybody had C'Thun. So we did, I think, 6 weeks of just recipe decks right out of the recipe, and we absolutely loved those decks. They were so fun. They were viable on the ladder, and they were built by deck experts on Team 5. So yeah, they're very effective decks. They're not just random decks thrown into a recipe and boom, you have a deck. They've actually played with them, tested them, and they work well on the ladder.
Yeah, I had really good fun with them too. The very first thing I did when Old Gods came out was I did the Whispers of Death because I knew I had opened Princess Huhuron, but I didn't really put much thought into, okay, what all needs to go in there other than Sylvanas. And it was actually really cool to be like, oh, there's already a deck here that did it. Let's just try that, and then I can customize from there. It's really useful.
And what's really nice about it is as new sets start coming out, expect those recipes to change.
Yeah.
So when a new set comes out and you don't know what to play, and maybe it's so fresh that you don't know any players that are playing it, no tournaments have gone out, no streamers are really picking a specific deck yet, check out one of those deck recipes and see if you have the cards for it, make it and play it.
Yeah, I think that's a great suggestion because I think this deck recipe is like 10 times more useful on day one of an expansion launch. I think I'll use it every single expansion launch just because it's like, oh, I want to try Warlock. Okay, there's Handlock is still good. Ancient Hordes. Oh, what's this? Maybe I'll try this one out. I don't think I would use it much like kind of at this point in the meta or even kind of later in the meta post-expansion, just because I already kind of have decks for each class that I like, and I've tried most of these other decks, but it's downright brilliant for when new cards come out.
Yeah, it's kind of a feature that I first thought was just going to be a dead feature when they first released it just before Whispers of the Old God. I'm like, well, people are going to play with these decks, and then they're not going to use them anymore. But then when Whispers came out and they changed those recipes, I was like, okay, now this feature is actually going to be viable for at least a good month, maybe 2 months before the meta changes with the new cards. So I'm excited to see what happens. I don't know if they're going to change it when the new adventure mode comes out that's slated for summer. But we're going to have new expansions at the beginning of the year and at the end of the year after BlizzCon.
Yeah.
So that'll be two times a year that you'll have new deck recipes.
Yeah, I bet they do update it with the adventures too. I hope they do at least. Because, I mean, it's awesome.
I do too, but the difference between adventures and doing it with an expansion, with the expansion, regular players are earning gold and buying packs or playing in the arena and getting packs. Where with the adventures, you're only doing the adventures if you have earned enough gold or paid out of pocket for that adventure.
Yeah. A man can dream. A man
can dream. Yes, you can. Dreams are free.
All right, so let's go through the rest of the community stuff. No new iTunes reviews, no new donations, but we did get the usual from Jake Crawford. Really nice every month. He sends in 7 packs for us to open, and we did that on the Dust Bowl. Videos on our show notes on GameDiplomat.com if you want to watch us open them all and see all the cards. But let's talk about some of our favorites and least favorites in the bunch. I am super excited because we opened one of my all-time favorite cards. Just crazy value since the very earliest Hearthstone matches I've played, the Azure Drake, my BFF.
Oh, Azure Drake's great card. It made its way into a lot of meta decks. If you need a good card draw with a good body on turn 5, the best way to go is Azure Drake.
Yeah. I mean, it throws in spell power just for kicks. Why not? Which every now and then it comes in handy, too.
I tell you, the one I liked the most was Crazed Alchemist.
Oh, yeah. You talked about him. See, this is one that, like, I wish I saw more of because it's such a cool trick. I just don't see him often.
I mean, it's great. He's so versatile right now in the meta. Mm-hmm. Before, there were... wasn't really good value in having the Crazed Alchemist because nobody was playing any cards you could really utilize it with. But it counters Doomsayer, which is in the meta right now. It counters things like Twilight Drake, which comes out. It's a 4/1 that gets health based on how many cards are in your hand. If you can flip him to a 4 attack, four health, and then kill it off with something on the board, and a 2/2 body on the board, that's just value. Yeah. I've seen it used with Darkshire Councilman, which is the 3-mana 1/5 that gets an extra attack every time you summon a minion. If you throw him out and throw Crazed Alchemist out, he flips to a 5/1 and then gets the +1. So he actually becomes a 6/1. Or if he's already gotten a couple buffs and maybe he's a 4/5, he'll flip and become a 6/4. And then you attack the face with a couple extra damage.
Ah, that's cool. I like that, especially if you're someone like Mage or something that can ping that 1 health away. That's almost removal.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And that's also a good counter for Darkshire Councilman, because usually they'll put him out on 3 ready to use the Forbidden Ritual to fill the board up. You throw out the Crazed Alchemist, ping him off, or run in with your Rogue Hero power, or run in with your Druid Hero power, and boom, threat is neutralized.
Yeah, that's super cool. All right, nice keep. All right, what are you going to dust?
Well, if it's the Dust Bowl, I have to dust the Dust Devil.
It just feels right.
This thing is horrible. Not even Crazed Alchemist can save it. Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah. I'm sad. I wanted something like Dust Devil to be really good, like a risky first play, but that card is just so much risk and 1 health? That's crazy.
I mean, even if it had stealth, it would be bad because there's so many things that just do 1 damage to the board.
Yeah.
Arcane Missiles. There's a new mage card I can't remember because it's not played that often. That does 1 damage to all the enemy minions. Warriors have lots of whirlwind effects. Yeah. It's just, it's a bad card.
Yeah, no argument there. The card I'm going to go with is Farsight, which is less of a bad card, but it's still, you're paying 3 to draw a card, and it costs 3 less, and it might have cost less than 3 originally anyways. It's just one of those best case cards, where best case... sure, it works, but
you're
still not
paying.
Great.
You're paying 3 and a card slot to make it cost 3 less.
Yeah.
Why not just put
and wasting
two
your whole
copies
turn.
Of that card? Why not just put 2 copies of that card in your deck? You know, it's. I've had people say, "Well, if you draw a 3-cost card, then you can put it out immediately." Yeah, but. If I drew it that turn on turn 3, I could put it out anyways.
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
I mean, like, the best case would be something like getting it and drawing Dr. Boom, right? So you could play. So it's like a weird form of overload. But it's so rare that would work out.
Yeah, if it was maybe two, I probably would play if it was one cost. I would think about a one of if it was a two cost. But that'd be pushing it.
Yeah. I'm with you. And hey, it's an epic. You get a fair amount of dust for it.
Yes, you do. And I will tell you the times I like to see Farsight is when it's golden.
Oh, I don't know if I've seen the golden animation, or I certainly don't remember it.
Well, I don't care about the golden animation. It's the amount of dust I get.
Oh. Ah, well played. Wise. All right, but let's talk about our card of the week, which is also an epic. You picked it out. Hit me with it. Oh, actually, wait, no. Hit me with your song first. Nice try. You almost got past.
I almost got past. I was about to... About to start moving on. All right, you ready for this?
I'm ready.
You're ready for this. All right, you ready?
Oh, yeah.
I got to take a drink and clear my throat.
I understand. You need that liquid courage. You pound as much as you need, buddy.
All right. Nobody expect this song I wreck, but I keep it strong, my mic in check. So I scribble, scrabble, dabble on the microphone, I babble, and I bust a fucky card of the week.
Nice.
Got some rapping action on the Happy Hearthstone.
I like it. I love it. I want some more of it.
That's good. I like that.
I'm just trying to fit in around here. I want to sound cool too. Dude, that was awesome.
I don't know about cool. Thank you. I've been working on that for a very long time.
Very long time? Like how long? Years?
A little bit over, yeah. Yeah, I've been waiting for the day that I was on Happy Hearthstone can bust a rhyme.
Wow, well, that's awesome. I'm excited. A year in the making, and we finally have it.
That's right.
So what card got the honor of getting that song sung to it?
Shadowcaster.
Bum, bum, bum.
It's a 5-mana, 4/4 rogue minion, and the battle cry is, choose a friendly minion, add a 1/1 copy to your hand that costs 1 mana. I love this card in my Dazoth Rogue deck.
Oh. So what is the ideal target? Just like Sylvanas?
It really depends on what your matchup is, but if you get Sylvanas out and they're taking a turn to try to manage the board, the best time to throw Sylvanas down is when they have a lot of minions on the board. They're likely not going to kill your Sylvanas off. Next turn, you can throw a Shadowcaster, and then you get a 1/1 Sylvanas for 1 mana that you can throw out and easily kill yourself with like a backstab or some kind of direct damage, even a SI7 agent to kill your own Sylvanas to get something on their side. What's even better is if your 1/1 Sylvanas dies, it brings back the full value Sylvanas with Nazoth.
Oh, really?
Yes, anything that has a death rattle or anything that returns something back to the that died before, it brings back the full valued minion and not the 1/1 minion.
Wow, that's really interesting. I did not know that. So this is a card that I was really interested in, but I don't think I've actually ever seen it played. So this has been really good value for you?
Yes, I've actually put out a Shadowcaster to target something, then I've Shadowcastered another Shadowcaster so that I can bring out Nazoth, and with the coin use Shadowcaster to put Nazoth back in my hand. That's a 1/1 minion that does the same effect, because they still have their effect, they just have a 1/1 body.
Interesting. Okay, that's really cool.
And I've even used it to Shadowcaster a Shadowcaster to cast a Shadowcaster on a Shadowcaster on a Shadowcaster on a Shadowcaster to fill my board with 7 1/1s.
What? Really?
All 1 mana each. Giving you a 1 mana Shadowcaster in your hand.
So how much of this card is just fun versus, like, do you think people should be running this in their rogue decks?
Your regular rogue decks, I wouldn't put it in, like, a Miracle Rogue. I might put it in some form of Pirate Rogue where you're having minions that have really good effects on them that affect the board, and it's great in the Zoth Rogue.
That's super cool. So are you running 2 copies?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Interesting.
And there's so many... Even if you Shadowcaster a something like a Undercity Huckster. Undercity Huckster is a 2-mana 2/2 that when he dies, you get a one copy of a card from your opponent's deck into your hand, or your opponent's class into your hand. So copying that, putting a 1/1 out that does that effect, and you get quite a few of those, you're using your opponent's class cards against them, and it just gives you more card advantage. The Shadowcaster not only is a good card by itself with specific cards like Sylvanas, it's versatile depending what you're playing against. If you find out that you all of a sudden need more taunts, well, then you Shadowcaster your Defender of Argus, pop him out for 1 mana, and you taunt up 2 more minions, including possibly the 4/4 Shadowcaster you just put out.
That sounds fun. You got me intrigued.
He is fun. He's fun and very versatile.
Yeah, that's cool. So are you running Unearthed Raptor in that deck too?
Very, very much. The thing about Unearthed Raptor, unfortunately, is he does not get brought back with N'Zoth because he's not a Death Rattle minion. He just copies a Death Rattle effect.
Oh, bummer.
But if you have a really good Death Rattle effect and you get your Unearthed Raptor out there and you Shadowcaster the Unearthed Raptor, he can copy that effect again. I've had four creatures on the board with Sylvanas' effect.
At that point, the opponent just gives up, right?
Usually, because nothing they put on the board is staying on their side.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And what's really nice, especially with Unearthed Raptor, is people will forget what Death Rattle's on there, and they'll do something like Brawl, and all of a sudden they lose their minion, and they're like, oh, wait, I forgot it had Sylvanas' effect.
That's awesome. Cool. Well, this is a super fun card that I haven't seen played, but I wanted to see played, so now I'm excited.
So Shadowcaster was worthy of my song?
It was. It was worthy, for sure. Thanks for picking that out.
Well, thank you.
Cool. So that's basically going to be the show for us. You can find the show notes and links, videos, all that good stuff, gamediplomat.com. Also links to Zeroshio's Hero Power cast. And their website, heropowerhs.com. You can check it out there. As always, we'd love to know what you thought of this show and what you'd like to see added in future episodes. You can go on the Google Plus community, Happy Hearthstone. You can send in questions in that community where Craig, who you guys met last week on the show, is collecting questions every week and send them to us so we can answer them live. So you can put them in there. Or you can contact me on Twitter at jaugustine or email me directly, ajosh@outlook.com. Or hey, maybe just leave a comment on the blog, gamediplomat.com. And if you enjoyed the show, please consider supporting us. You can find more info at gamediplomat.com/donate. Zeroshio, you kind of mentioned it earlier, but where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter at ZeroshioHS, and you can find Hero Power on Twitter at HeroPower_cast, and our website's HeroPowerHS.com.
Nice. Awesome. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show, Zeroshio. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, and thanks again to everyone listening for visiting the Happy Hearthstone and having a little fun with us. We'll see you next time.
And don't forget to use your hero power.